Another big ice out protest in Minnesota. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News, and this one targets Target.
Ice out! Ice out! Ice out!
They're demonstrating outside the retailer's headquarters on the new CEO's first day as they demand Target stop allowing immigration agents in their stores and parking lots as Democrats keep demanding ICE be reformed. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries tells ABC's This Week.
We need to make sure that there are complete and independent investigations so that when ICE or DHS agents break the law, they are held accountable.
A fight over funding Homeland Security has partially shut the government down as Republicans try to approve by tomorrow a Senate compromise, giving DHS only 2 weeks of money while funding the rest of the government through September.
Things could get pretty messy here on the Hill today as House Republicans may have to advance this package of government spending bills without any help from Democrats whatsoever. Now, the first thing that House Republicans have to do is pass a complicated procedural vote known as a rule. That has to pass in order to get an actual vote on these funding bills on the House floor. Now, that procedural vote is going to be a whole lot easier said than done.
Fox's Bill Malusian. The Republican House majority may get even smaller today, 218 to 214, if Christian Menefee's sworn in after the Democrat won a special election Saturday for a vacant seat in Texas. As American ships move to the Middle East following President Trump's threat to take action over Iran's nuclear program and the deadly crackdown on protests, Iran's supreme leader says that could lead to war.
We are not the instigators, and we do not seek to attack any country, but the Iranian nation will deliver a firm blow to anyone who attacks or harasses it.
The president responded, we'll see if he's right, if Iran doesn't make a nuclear deal. It's Groundhog Day, and after all the snow and ice and frigid cold, it appears we won't get an early spring.
Six more weeks of winter abound!
That was after Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow this morning at Gobbler's Knob in Pennsylvania, where the wind chill was below zero. America's listening to Fox News.
This President's Day, Pure Talk is honoring Jackson and Lincoln by offering unlimited talk, text, and plenty of data for just $25 a month. Meanwhile, Big Wireless is honoring Ben Franklin by charging families hundreds of dollars for the same 5G coverage. What? Franklin wasn't even a president. Hang on to those Benjamins. Dial pound 250, say micro, and save 50% off your first month. That's pound 250, micro, to switch to an American wireless company that's truly unprecedented. Pure Talk.
He's coming. Here he comes.
Surprise! Your table saw broke. Also, the warranty expired weeks ago, so you need to pay for a new one out of pocket.
At Progressive, we know small business owners don't usually like surprises because they cost you money. But a good surprise that could save you money? Getting a commercial auto quote from Progressive.
Oh, and the replacement part you ordered doesn't fit, so it's completely useless.
What a waste.
Surprise yourself. See if you can save in as little as 8 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Madeline Murray. Locals held another peaceful protest against ICE over the weekend on the corner by Dunkin' Donuts on 4th Avenue. Protesters stood on the corner holding signs together in solidarity to speak out against the actions of ICE agents. Protesters said they are out there to help make the community aware of what is happening in the world around us. And locals took a trip to the past for the Wild West days at Yuma Territorial Prison. From stunt shows to live country western music, the event gave locals the chance to dive into the Wild West culture. With activities and entertainment for all ages, it always draws a big crowd. Over 1,500 people traveled to Yuma Territorial Prison for the event and helped celebrate its 150th anniversary. Proceeds from the event went to the Territorial Prison's maintenance and preservation. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Forecast for today, 80 with partly cloudy skies. Tonight, partly cloudy and 51, 83 and sunny tomorrow, 59 tomorrow night. Not much wind the next 2 days. Winds will pick up again on Wednesday, but we'll warm to 86 for the high that day.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex. How did the interview go?
I did it. I got the job. I can't believe it.
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project.
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations.
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to another edition of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner here with Thomas Sparks, and in the background, always making sure that we are only speaking truth at the highest level of accuracy, is Martine. We're going to be reviewing a video posted on YouTube by Andrew Heaton in the Reason Magazine channel. This is a channel I recently came upon, and he is a satirist. Mm. That's the way you pronounce it. A comedian. He does a lot of political themes, mm-hmm. and he does it in a humor-related way so you can get the what's going on without being bored out of your mind. And actually, I found that he's been able to put in a more succinct way how governments, different governments run than I'd ever heard it before, like fascism, how he explains it. Mm-hmm. He throws some jokes in there, and so it sounds like, well, he may not be actually serious, or this might not be factual, but as you listen to the content, there's a lot of depth to it. And so I want to just listen to the show and give some reactions to it. I think it'll be a good education for us and our audience. So hit it, Martine.
Recently, several people who won't invite me to their birthday parties accused Donald Trump of being a socialist. Gavin Newsom, who many pundits credibly believe to be the governor of California, accused Trump of committing socialism. This is because, under Trump, the federal government keeps buying stock in private companies. At the time that I had ChatGPT write this script, those companies were Intel, MP Materials, Lithium Americas, U.S. Steel, and some Canadian mining company that mines cobalt or some other stupid mineral I can hate. Raising the question, but we might also ask, is Trump, as Gavin Newsom contends, a full-blown socialist? Or maybe just an asymptomatic carrier of socialism, like how I am with tuberculosis? Let's nail down what we're talking about. Socialism is where the government owns and controls the means of production. For example, in the Soviet Union, televisions were not made by private companies, but by government agencies, like the Ministry of Electronic Disappointment. Instead of optimizing sales and profit margins, they just had to hit government output targets, which was a lot easier to do if they massively cut back on quality to the point that Soviet televisions literally had a tendency to explode. Not a great incentive structure for producing more stuff, even if an improvement over the view. On a more benign...
Okay, so let's stop it there. So socialism, what did we get out of that? It sounds a lot like another form of government that we're familiar with that used to be practiced in the USSR, Thomas.
Yeah, so it's very relative to communism, but government owns the means of production. So nobody is out there trying to make a dollar. They're just told that they need to work here and they need to produce this many things, and their pay is the same either way, whether it's a great thing or a poor thing.
Yeah. So the key takeaway that I got from that was socialism and communism are just two different, it's the same form of government at two different levels. Mm-hmm. So socialism is a move away from private ownership and the ability for individuals to own property, where the government is getting more and more involved. And communism is like, okay, we full on admit the government owns it all. Mm-hmm. And so socialism is communism's little brother, mm-hmm. but it will grow up and eventually it will become communism. And that's its intent. It's mm-hmm. it's never intended to stay the little brother. It's always intended to grow up. And so he only depicts three forms of government: socialism, fascism, mm-hmm. and capitalism. And when you break them up those three ways, it's much easier to say, okay, those are the distinct differences. So for our audience out there, socialism is not different than communism. It's mm-hmm. just a different progression of communism. It's just right.
Not as intense.
Yes, it's the earlier version of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're moving on to the next government here.
Yeah, well, and so the earlier version of it, he's talking about Great Britain, where he's saying we haven't got full blown socialism, i.e., communism, because they haven't taken over all means of production and all property. They've only taken over certain means, like healthcare.
Okay.
Nine level. The British have socialized medicine. The doctors and nurses who cure and or taunt tuberculosis are government employees, and British healthcare is mostly provided by the NHS, the government. So if we're talking about nationalizing an industry that provides goods or services, that's socialism. Here are some social...
Cuba, Laos, North Korea, Vietnam, Mordor...
That's Lord of the Rings reference?
Corporatism, or state capitalism, or if you want to be edgy, fascism, is when the private sector owns the means of production, but the government controls it. You own the shoe factory, but some bureaucrat in the capital issues diktats on what kind of shoes to make, how many, and so forth, probably jackboots. You own the deed to the factory. You keep the profit from the factory, but the economy itself is still top-down managed by the central government. So China used to be socialist under Mao. Then after they starved upteen million people, they switched over to today state capitalism. Some of China's biggest companies are for-profit enterprises. The China Construction Bank, China Mobile, Air China. They're not government agencies, but the Chinese Politburo is the majority owner of their corporate stocks. So they operate as businesses, but the Chinese government is the most powerful player on the board of directors and can therefore command their internal business.
Okay, so...
fascism. Yeah, seems like a step down from like the communism in appearance, where you've got, I get to own the stuff, but you tell me what I have to do with my own stuff.
So it's interesting because... what is the company that comes or country that comes to mind when you hear fascism?
I think Stalin's Russia. Like,
really?
Yeah, that's the one that I think of.
Because Stalin's Russia
mm-hmm.
is communist.
Yeah, well, I think they had a lot of like fascist points. So like there's an example in Basic Economics about Stalin's I guess USSR.
Uh-huh.
In that like they had laws but like for tractor making, like all the tractors they needed to be painted like communist, like red, and it needed to have like the right, you know,
hammer and sickle
insignia on it, and that uh-huh. was by law. And this tractor factory ran out of red paint, so they weren't producing tractors because they were so scared that they would come and get killed if they were producing tractors that were green. They had a lot
of
green
paint.
Did
the tractor company have an owner that got to keep the profits and
distribute them to
his family and friends as he saw fit?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually, because that I guess that is the determining factor between communism and fascism is who keeps the dollar.
Yeah, so when I think of fascism, I think Italy, Germany, World War II, right, in the 1930s and 40s. So Italy, under Mussolini, he told the individual companies what to make.
Mm-hmm.
And gave them big government contracts and had government shares in the company. And if they didn't make and didn't join the correct party, then their company went out of business very quickly. But if they did make and conform with the politics, then they would do very nicely. And so Germany, you know, it excelled financially, or at least the quality of life increased. From the 30s, even the late 20s through the 30s, under Hitler and fascism, because the government was saying, hey, do this and you'll succeed. And those companies that got on board with that succeeded very well and became very wealthy.
That makes sense.
And a lot of production was done. He allowed that production to be maintained in the private sector, although he determined how it would be used for the overall benefit of the people and the party's prevailing ideals.
That makes sense.
So what's going on right now? Here's the epiphany that I got. China is not communist.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Like it's fascist. By his definition.
And the irony is we are being called fascist a lot.
Right.
Because it's fun to make fun of Republicans and how they want to dominate public policy.
Mm-hmm.
I think any party wants to dominate public policy because they think their ideals are righteous and they're the best suited mm-hmm. for the public. But fascism is controlling those means, whereas any party that says we need to pull back government control over the production of any type of asset, then I think that's getting closer to pure capitalism, which is private ownership of production.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime that the government encroaches on or encourages a certain type of production and will encourage it either by policy or even purchasing stock in that company, now you're edging into fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And so China certainly controls what companies do, what they produce, what type of media they're able to put out there, how they advertise, and anybody that goes contrary to the party's politics, then they're not going to be in business very long. That is an epiphany that occurred to me that's very scary, because the worst human atrocity that we've had in the history of our world is a fascist country doing exactly what China is now doing.
Mm-hmm.
And China's doing it at a much larger scale.
Sure. Yeah, that is intense stuff. Are we moving on to capitalism?
Now we're moving to capitalism.
Okay.
Or at least, so we're going to hear the theory of capitalism, and then it's going to be compared to what's going on in the United States. So those of us who, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm red-blooded American, this is a capitalistic society, and that's that. Well, look closely. How is the government operating? And look at the policies. Do they look more like fascism? Is the government trying to steer the production in a certain direction? If so, it's fascism. Even if you agree that there's a national interest behind that policy and the decision for the government to get involved, it's still fascism. It's still top-down direction of the production of goods, services, whatever it is. And as long as you've got a totally altruistic, mm-hmm. noble leader, during that period it's fine. Problem is, you've created a policy where anybody else that follows them may not have those same traits. I don't believe that we have any leaders right now mm-hmm. that are totally altruistic.
Sure. And I also,
it's not a trait that is natural in human nature.
Mm-hmm. I also think, to use another great word, omniscience. Like, you don't have somebody who knows everybody's needs, your entire country's needs at the time.
Right.
I think that's a big knock on communism and fascism, is when you have all the means of production locked away in the capital, and you have a giant country like Russia, when a lot of your population is away from your capital, you don't know who needs what. You could be the most brilliant economist in the world, but you're not that good. You can't tell who needs what when. The only way to do that is to have, you know, the dollar or the currency dictate where it needs to go. It's like water, right? Like, you pour water, it's going to find downhill. Like, that's just physics. I think that's kind of how I think of the capitalist system, and we'll hear a little bit more about it. It's just going to, the dollar's going to find where it needs to go, because anytime people can make money, they'll find where they need to go.
Right.
So, okay, well, a little bit about capitalism.
Decisions. Finally, capitalism is where the private sector owns and controls the means of production. You own the shoe factory, and you determine what kind of shoes, boots, and stilettos you will make, and how many you will make, and how high you'll make those stilettos. Anyway, you will create shoes based on customer demand, or you'll go out of business. In capitalism, there is a government, but that government enforces contracts, it protects private property from theft and bears, provides safety oversight, and it regulates negative
externalities. The government plays the role of a cop or a referee in capitalism. It doesn't play the role of an active business manager. Anyway, let's return to Trump. In the last few months, President Trump has negotiated deals for the United States to purchase great, sweaty, heaving clumps of stock in private companies. The federal government now owns about 10% of Intel. Although, admittedly, it's not a controlling stock, it's a passive share. U.S. officials don't sit on the board of directors for that company or vote on internal business decisions, like what kind of computer stilettos they can make. Similarly, the Trump administration negotiated a deal wherein the Department of War invested $400 million in a rare earth mining company in exchange for convertible shares of stock. Now, so far, that's weird, but not entirely different than when a public pension owns stock in a private company. But it's part of a broader pattern of the government buying stock in private companies. The alarming bit, in my opinion, is the Trump administration approved the acquisition of U.S. Steel by Japan's Nippon Steel, but only on the condition that Uncle Sam would be given a golden share. It means the federal government exercises extraordinary influence despite not being a majority shareholder. According to that agreement, the U.S. federal government gets a member on the board of directors, and it can block major corporate actions like shutting down plants, relocating headquarters. Now, that's not socialism. But that's not really the issue either. It's just a different version of authoritarian top-down economics. If socialism is Red Bull with arsenic in it, corporatism is sugar-free Red Bull.
Okay, so let's stop there.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Truckmates, Yuma's Fix Up Your Pickup Truck Store is Yuma's home for Snug Top shells and lids. Snug Top, designed and manufactured to the highest standard. Industry-leading quality and trend-setting design to protect and complement your vehicle. That's Snug Top. Truckmates is also the home of expert spray and bed liners, spraying mil-spec protective coatings, committed to unwavering excellence and unparalleled customer service. Expert liners, with available national warranty coverage and installed by Yuma's most experienced spray on team at Truckmates. Truckmates is also the home for BDS suspensions, the highest quality aftermarket suspension lift kits, leveling kits, and accessories for 4x4 off-road trucks and Jeep enthusiasts. And don't forget 3M window tinting, the originators of window tinting with nationwide lifetime warranty at Truckmates. That's expert spray and bed liners, BDS suspensions, 3M window tinting, and Snug Top, all at Truckmates. 32nd Street next to Lowe's.
El Dorado broadcasters and this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members. Special Olympics, Las Lavas, Gentiva Hospice, True Med Aesthetics, Fostering Hope, Yuma, Daniel Dorn, and Raw Aesthetics and Performance. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Ashley at yumachamber.org. That's Ashley at yumachamber.org or call 928-782-2567.
Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
Handle on the Law, 8 o'clock Saturday nights on 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I don't get that analogy. You're Red Bull. Who's a Red Bull fan here? Martine. Okay, so Red Bull, arsenic, obviously. Red Bull gets you hyped up. Arsenic kills you.
Yep.
What does hemlock do?
I think it's just another drug. It's just not as, like, aggressive.
Lethal.
Yeah. Hemlock's poison, isn't it? Yeah, so he's basically saying they both stink and they're both gonna kill you, but not at quite of a high rate.
So it boosts you up first.
Yeah.
But ultimately it kills you.
Yeah.
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think, just off the top of your head, about the US government purchasing stock in companies?
Yeah, I don't like it. I think that, kind of like to your earlier point, like if you could guarantee that they're always going to do the right thing and have people, you know, and be good at what they do, then great. But like this isn't, we're not in that life yet.
Well, and my question is, why would the government purchase stock? You know, people purchase stock
mm-hmm.
because they think that they're going to help a company either do well because they like what that company does
mm-hmm.
and they just want that company to go and be more productive, or more often they want to make money,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't really care that much about what the company does. That company might make, you know, trucks that haul cow manure,
mm-hmm.
and they live in the middle of an urban environment where they don't care about that. And so, but hey, if it's going to increase their bottom line and their pension at the end of the day, that's fine. I don't care how many trucks are hauling cow manure and how successful that is, as long as their stock is going up, right? But if a government entity is investing in a certain company, where did the government get that money?
Mm-hmm. Taxpayers.
So it's our money. So they're just telling us where to invest.
Right.
But then they are taking all of the decision-making authority that comes from investors. We get these big stock portfolios when we buy even a few shares of stock that says we've got a vote coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And any one of us as a regular middle-class citizen is not going to have very much interest in a publicly traded stock.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a little bit of vote. And if we try to call up the company and say, this is how I think the company really ought to be manufacturing these trucks hauling manure, they're going to say, oh, okay, great. And
if 1% shareholder.
Exactly. If we get through at all to the company. Right. But if the U.S. government does it, they've got two things going for them. Number one, they control policy. Number two, they hold a lot of stock and the ability, they've got the buying power to buy a bunch more stock or put in regulations that are going to curtail that company's ability to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this sounding a lot more like fascism.
Yep, I think you're spot on. I just, when you've got the government influencing business decisions, it's the slippery slope every time. And really, it just seems like what the government's doing is you, citizen, are not wise enough, smart enough to know what the country needs to do. I, as this figurehead, know exactly what we need. We need steel, for example. So I'm going to take all the taxpayer dollars, force invest it into steel as a way. My guess is the goal is it's a stimulus. Like, we need more steel because we want our construction business to go booming so we can create jobs. And we can't do that because of the bottleneck steel. So let me put all the money in steel, remove the bottleneck. Problem is, that's just artificial.
Yeah.
Like, it's masking, like, the economic pain, I feel like.
Yeah. I really think it's like, you know, oxycodone on maybe bone cancer.
Yeah.
Right? You might not feel it for a longer period of time, and you might even feel better initially.
Right.
But eventually, the damage is continuing. We're not focusing on the real problem. Mm-hmm. And when it, you know, rears its ugly head, you're dying.
Yeah. I think that's the argument against stimulus in general. Like, economists like Milton Friedman or Thomas Sowell, they always say, like, you don't. If someone needs a stimulus, it's because they're failing.
Yes.
And you need to either let them fail or let them adapt. Like, don't, you know, it's just like your kid. Like, if they're making bad decisions and you keep rewarding them for making bad decisions, you're going to have no change of behavior.
Right.
It's that simple.
And it's hard sometimes. I know that with the steel industry, with China getting involved, they were producing steel at levels that were cheaper and could be imported. And so for consumers, we want to buy something that makes our dollar go the furthest. So, you know, we buy China steel, and then car manufacturers are using that steel to manufacture their cars. And so the steel industry, they have to cut wages. And so the employees say, no, this isn't fair. We can't live off of this wage. Well, you can't live off it at the standard that Americans have become accustomed to. Could you live off it at the standards that the Chinese that are making their steel are accustomed to? Yeah, you probably could.
Right.
You're not willing to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to unionize and you're all going to walk out. And those unions are then protected. And then the government continues to get involved protecting these unions. And people's standard of living start to be supplemented or at least protected by the government artificially. So now U.S. companies cannot compete with Chinese companies. So we either got to put on tariffs on China, or we got to subsidize U.S. steel. We keep just masking the problem. What would be a really good thing is for these companies to innovate. mm-hmm. and lay off the employees that they can't afford mm-hmm. to pay at the rate that is going to give them the standard of living that they want, those employees go find a different area of employment or create their own business mm-hmm. and innovate themselves. And then the innovation that is allowed to occur in the United States, which is still today the capital of innovation. All mm-hmm. most innovation occurs here and inventions occur here. And we're just stymieing it from trickling down into the actual production because we're rewarding workers and companies for not necessarily implementing the innovation. We're rewarding them for outsourcing it to mm-hmm. countries that will continue to do the production at the lower wages and at the lower prices. And that is complicating the problem.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the idea of like national security versus economic feasibility? So like I've heard Vivek Ramaswamy, when he was running, had some of those ideas is, you know, we rely on China too much for like microchips mm-hmm. and things like that, where we can get them cheaper there. But how does that play into, do we want to be 100% reliant on China for our microchip manufacturing?
Yeah, and when you say China, you mean Taiwan.
Okay.
And Taiwan and China, they're both, you know, when you go back in their history, Chinese individuals. But mm-hmm. Taiwan is essentially where the Chinese loyalists of a free government escaped when Mao took over and wanted to impose communism. And so Chinese was a capitalistic republic.
Mm-hmm.
And it fled to Taiwan to escape the death camps of Mao. And it was recognized as the legitimate leader of the Chinese government, and that all of the mainland China was just basically in rebellion until basically the Nixon era.
Okay.
And in Nixon, he says, okay, we're going to start recognizing mainland China because it's got nukes and we don't want those nukes to go against us. And Russia's got nukes. And so we'd better be friends with our enemies that have nukes and our worst enemies that have nukes. And then started recognizing mainland China as, mm-hmm. as the rightful government. But it didn't say what Taiwan was. It didn't say that Taiwan was subject necessarily to China. And my son asked an interesting question. He says, Taiwan, is it a country on its own? And I said, well, that's a darn good question. And it's honestly a question that I think a lot of politicians would answer differently based on who you asked. But I asked him, well, does it have its own flag? Yeah. Okay. Does it have its own voting system? Yeah. Does it have its own system of government? Yeah. Well, sounds like a country to me.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not the rest of the world recognizes it as a country, that is different. But it certainly operates like a country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's constantly threatened by mainland China to be invaded and taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And it is producing, what did it say, like 90% of the microchips out there mm-hmm. that we need to run anything
right.
from these microphones that we're talking into right now to the missiles that are supersonic and can carry nuclear warheads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very, very powerful little island right mm-hmm. there. And the technology that was created to produce those microchips actually was developed in Silicon Valley
mm-hmm.
in the United States. But we shipped over the means of production to Taiwan because they did it more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so your question is, should the government get involved and tell private companies you're not able to freely trade with Taiwan because it presents a national security threat?
Yeah, I guess that is essentially the question, is at what point does it become better to pay a higher price for a product to ensure national security versus the lowest price and expose yourself?
Mm-hmm. So what's your answer to that?
I don't know. That's why I asked you.
Well, Martine, what's your answer to that?
Yeah, so if you can, let's say you can pay $100 for microchips if you let Taiwan or China or a foreign country develop them. But if you get buy them in the U.S., they cost you $200. So the average person wants to save $100, right? Mm-hmm. We would all like to save some money. But if everyone buys all this stuff from the foreign countries, we're exposing ourselves to them just cutting us off and having a national security threat because they produce everything that we're buying.
And if they decide not to sell to us, then our ability to create computers and everything that makes our everyday life and just the common pleasantries that we have exist, then we're going to go back into the dark age. And if they get a better deal from China to not sell to us, and if they don't sell to us and China will give them more money, then they could create a superpower essentially overnight.
I don't know. That's very difficult.
Yeah, what do you do in that situation?
Well, I mean, from what you guys said about the technology came from Silicon Valley here, I think, you know, I mean, it might just sounds so blasé. So, like, until they actually do start doing that, like, until they actually, like, shut us off from that supply, I think it would be fine to continue buying from them because it's in our interest to do it. Because if America sells it for double the price and Taiwan sells it for half the price, and it's obviously, like, that's the better option for us. Even though we're not actually producing it, we're not creating those jobs for people within our own nation. We're sourcing it to someone who's more efficient at it. And I think I remember the economic concept correctly. I think that's a comparative advantage that they have. Since Taiwan can do it at a much more efficient rate and they can sell it to us, we should continue to let them do it because it's not in our interest to do that. However, though, I think that if they were to cut us off, I think that would just open up for our own innovation within the States. If the information came from within us, then I think it would be in our best interest if we got cut off to then find a way to not only beat them, but just make it extremely efficient within us.
Yeah, and those factories are super technical and they take a long time to build. Literally at this point, microchips, the layers and the wiring in the microchips are so fine, they're at the atomic level. It's unbelievable. They're doing them, you know, through this photo imagery that is imprinted on the silicon chip that is shot with a photo because it has to be so small that is shot through a microscope onto this chip, right?
Well,
and so even a piece of dust would destroy a chip. It would destroy tens of thousands of these circuits that are put on there. So these factories have to be clean, immensely clean, and the workers have to be trained to go through the delicate process of making sure that there is no contaminants put in there. Can we do that here? Yes. Are we willing to do it and pay the wages that individuals demand for that level of competency and education that's required to do it? I think that our education system gets in the way of it because we spend the first 12 years of our lives going through kindergarten through, not 12 years of our lives, 12 years of education until you graduate high school. And my personal opinion, 90% of the time spent at high school is a waste. And we're not really learning things that can be applicable and productive in a typical society. We need to get to the point quicker, right off the bat, help citizens find out what they're good at, what they like, what they can be productive at, or incentivize them through good paying jobs to deviate from this just one-size-fits-all education system to a more skilled profession so we can compete with these other countries. Go ahead, Martin.
So then can I ask you a question? At what point would you, let's say, that the paths should cross, you know, instead of, I'm assuming you're not saying, like, just get rid of the education system. From what I'm hearing is at some point there needs to be that switch to then start introducing, you know, the students into specialized fields or specialized markets. Is that what you're saying?
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
We're the comfort experts, people you can trust. Ask our customers. That's why they count on us. Over 50 years of service, keep us going strong. We've got a name you can depend upon. Hansberger Refrigeration and Electric. Hansberger, count on us.
As we wonder why school shootings keep happening, someone is lashing out at loved ones. As we argue about legislation, someone is posting threats on social media. As we continue to mourn the loss of innocent lives, someone is planning the death of more. Knowing the signs is the best way to prevent gun violence. Learn the signs at sandyhookpromise.org.
From the Saturday Evening Post, this is the Post Perspective for February 2nd. The first gallons of leaded gasoline were sold at a gas station in Dayton, Ohio, this morning in 1924. Chemists had found that just one part of lead to 1,000 parts of gasoline eliminated the commonly heard engine knocking that heralded poor ignition and lost power. But scientists of the time didn't know how destructive lead could be to the nervous system. Workers preparing the tetraethyl lead mixture began experiencing hallucinations, paranoia, and outbursts of violent insanity. There were 17 cases of lead poisoning. 5 men died. Another 35 were too disabled to continue working. The operation was shut down, but with modifications, resumed production. Today, researchers have concluded that over half of all Americans had significant lead in their bloodstream as children, enough to raise their risks of mental illness and lowered intelligence. When Congress banned leaded gas in 1996, the EPA administrator called it one of the great environmental achievements of all time.
I always tell people I was the luckiest guy in the world. I wanted to be an army man or a fireman, and I got to do both. As a firefighter, my job was about saving lives. I never thought one day I would be fighting for mine.
After spending his career answering the call to save others, Ken was diagnosed with ALS. Now he's facing his biggest battle, for more time. For 70 years, Muscular Dystrophy Association has been answering the call to help people live longer and more independent lives.
MDA means to me hope.
MDA is leading the way for people living with ALS, muscular dystrophy, and other neuromuscular diseases by accelerating research, advancing care, and advocating to empower families like Ken's.
I wouldn't be living as good of a life with ALS if it wasn't for MDA. MDA is helping people live stronger and love longer. Learn more at MDA.org today.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Yes, exactly. And I think that what needs to happen is the government needs to get out of the way. Right now, the government requires that kids go to school, and there's truancy, and parents can be arrested if they don't send their kids to school. And I know there was a big case against the Amish because they wanted to provide schooling at home. They thought public school was going to corrupt their kids. It turns out they're right.
Mm-hmm.
and they won and said, listen, as long as you can provide the same level of education at home, then yes, you can do it at home. That, I think, was the canary in the coal mine. That was like, okay, government, you've gone too far. We need to promote education, but you can't govern education. The same way that Thomas said, we can't determine how many shoes are needed at a certain shoe factory by one person sitting in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We can't determine how well and by what means a child can be educated based on his living situation. Kids are living in rural areas of North Dakota and then inner cities of Chicago. They're not going to need the same type of education or benefit from the same type of curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get to fifth grade, and there's all of these shows and YouTube channels out there. Are you smarter than a fifth grader? And most of the time, working adults who are successful in their own careers can't beat a fifth grader who has got a good concept of the curriculum that he's being taught in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of them. I couldn't just sit down and take a fifth grade math test and pass it, because multiplying fractions, dividing fractions, remembering what, you know, the different types of, I'm getting into math terms.
Orders of operation.
With the orders of operation, yes, but the different powers and how they apply.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yes, yeah, and
exponents.
Exponents, yes. I mean, if you're able to do just the basic algebra and you're able to implement that on a on an Excel spreadsheet, you look like a genius.
Yeah.
In most work environments.
Yeah.
And that's fifth grade level of math. What that's saying is we're just pushing kids right past that. They're learning it for a second, then they're forgetting it. And they're not even taking that out of 12th grade, and let alone in adulthood and applying it to society. And that is the result of the government being in control of the education system. I think there's got to be privatized control over the education system and let parents primarily, which is the best form of government, determine where their kids are going to benefit most, either lessen the tax burden or return those tax dollars to the parents so they, okay, we've got this collective savings account that you can use for your child's education. Just as long as it's used for their education, then you get to decide how that education rolls out. And even if the parent did a tenth of what public education does with that money, which is pretty low standard, I think they would still be doing better
mm-hmm.
than the public education.
Well, you see that in Arizona. Like, we have like the voucher system now in Arizona. We're one of the only states to have it, where parents can opt to not send their kid to public school, and they get the funding that would have been spent on their child, and mm-hmm. the government basically writes the parents a check in the form of a reimbursement and say, go spend this on your kid's education how yeah. you see fit. And we use it. My kids are using the program. It's.
Do you know how much that is per semester?
I can't remember. I think
based on grade, right?
It is based on grade, like $6,000.
Yeah, that sounds right. It's like $6,000 a semester, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it's been great because I get to pick. Like, I want my kid to do this extracurricular activity. I don't want them to, you know, they are interested in gymnastics, so that they use that as their PE credit.
Yeah.
Instead of going to PE and playing dodgeball like every day, right?
Right.
They actually get to learn a skill and, you know, become coordinated, and that's great. And they have that to look forward to. But then also, it's half the price, I think, of what the kid. It's not the full price of what the kids spend in the public school.
Right.
So we're saving money, taxpayer money, and getting a higher quality education. And really, from what I can tell, the only people who don't like it in the state, teachers unions.
Teachers unions and governors that need the vote from teachers unions.
Right.
Governors and legislators. You know, my kids did the same thing and went through the Prenda program. And they went on these trips to Washington, D.C. They went to Gettysburg. They went to Boston and learned about, you know, where the Revolutionary War started, and at those locations learned about the Paul Revere's and the Benjamin Franklin's and the Thomas Jefferson's, and went to Mount Vernon. And it's just, I haven't been to those places.
Mm-hmm.
I was given the opportunity. I could have gone with them as part of the class and actually had means for me to go as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take the time off of work to do it, and I'm kicking myself for it. But nonetheless, it encourages two things. Real learning from being there and experiencing or at least seeing where the events occurred and taking an appreciation for what has happened. You can't judge our country very accurately unless you try to put yourself in the shoes of the individuals that made those decisions that formed our country. And number two, it creates that bond between the educators, a lot of times now the parents, and the children. Whereas we send our kids off to school, to public school, for a majority of their waking hours. And so what we've done is we've traded our parent card over for a paycheck, and we've given it to a teacher with qualifications that the bar, we've got to all admit, is becoming lower and lower. Now, are all teachers less qualified? Maybe not, but the bar is lower for them to get into the field, and everybody in my mind is less qualified than me to become my kid's parent.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think the overarching principle is get the decision maker closer to the decision. Like if the decision maker is in DC and the decision is in what class is my kid going to go to in Yuma.
Yeah.
Like there are that's so far away. There's no way you can make a correct decision. I'm right there. And I think the reason why we don't do that is it's always about power, control, and you're too dumb, citizen, to make that decision. I'm smart. I'm in government, and I'll make the decision for you.
Yep.
And obviously that's not true. Like our country is based on the fact that, you know, Great Britain across the ocean, you don't know what's good for us. You're all the way across the Atlantic. We know what's good for us.
Right.
And we're going to do it ourselves.
All right. Let's go on with this clip.
With Hemlock, whether we're socialist or capitalist is besides the point. It's top-down command control economy, which in my house needs a safe word. And that is a big problem. When federal bureaucrats have a direct leadership role in the corporate governance of a private company, they will steer that company towards political decisions rather than business decisions. Maybe instead of steel ball bearings, now Robot Flesh LTD, great name, has to make gold-plated slinkies, even if there's no demand. Or, instead of choosing their factory location based on skill sets and costs, now placement's based on politics. Is it going to go to a tofu state or a diabetes state? Or maybe the Slinky factory can automate some jobs, save some money, but the government doesn't want layoffs because it'll make unemployment numbers look bad. Maybe politicians just like the optics of Americans banging shit together to produce sparks because it looks cool and manly and burly, even if there are more efficient means of making and acquiring and eating steel. But even with passive ownership of Intel and M4, there are still problems. When the government acquires stock in a company, it creates a conflict of interest. Is Uncle Sam a customer, a shareholder, a regulator? If the government receives revenue from private companies as a shareholder, rather than through neutral taxes, it's incentivized to protect that revenue source. When selecting among contracts, the government won't simply look at who provides the most cost-effective, high-quality stilettos. It's apt to award contracts to the company it gets revenue from, even if that's a bad use of taxpayer dollars. Left to their own devices, private companies might rightly fail, and often do. But if Uncle Sam is the principal shareholder, they won't. When the government owns stock in private companies, the innovation and efficiency of the free enterprise system gets edged out by politics. Also, it's worth pointing out, you know the Democrats are going to run with this when they get back in power, right? Here in about 20 years, when that little puke Harry Sisson or AOC or some goddamn sentient blue sky account becomes president and I plunge into an unfathomable depression, they're going to want the government to buy controlling stocks and companies they want to manipulate. Energy, health insurance, gun makers, meat farms, NASCAR, maybe a moon base. I don't know. They'll want their hand in it. So is Donald Trump a socialist? No, he's not a socialist. And on some level, I appreciate what he's trying to do. I think what he's trying to do is basically say, hey, instead of us giving money to big companies for free, we should be getting the most out of the deal. We're not going to give them a subsidy. We're going to do a deal where we get dividends. I appreciate that. But the effect of these acquisitions is that America is inching towards an economy in which the government doesn't play referee, it's a player on the field. And the government is a really, really stupid player. And the real question is not whether or not we're technically socialists a la Venezuela or technically state capitalists a la China. It's whether we want an emergent free enterprise system or a top-down authoritarian system. I don't want the government trying to run businesses. I don't think it belongs in bedrooms or boardrooms. Anyway, this is a slide towards a top-down command economy, and I, for one, don't like it. Command Economies make bad, low-quality shoes and less stuff in general. They make televisions explode. The government should be a referee, not a board member.
I'm 100% with that. I mean, that clip, you can find it. What is the clip called on YouTube, Martine?
On YouTube, it's Gavin Newsom called Trump a socialist. Is he?
Okay. So we've got Reason Magazine channel.
Reason TV is
the Reason TV channel on YouTube. So if you want to listen to this, it's Reason TV on YouTube. And you can listen to the episode that says, Gavin Newsom calls Trump a socialist. Is he? That is the title of the clip that we are reviewing right now. This guy, Andrew
Heaton
gets it spot on. He's got some humor in there, and some of it's a little bit colorful, I should say.
Sure.
He's got some humor in there that's a little bit colorful, but his points are spot on. Do we want the government, who has proven to be the most wasteful entity out there when it comes to using our resources, to be on the board of companies that determine some of the most important means of production? And my answer is no. The government needs to stay 100% out of the private sector. It should be there to protect us and our property against what he says, burglars, bears, whatever it may be. But they should not be there to participate in the means of production, because they, if they could have done it, they would have done it on their own, and then just take their time off to go participate in policy-making decisions.
Absolutely. I think the average American woman and man, like, you're good enough to do it on your own. You don't need the government. Bet on yourself. Don't let someone else run your life. Do it yourself.
Yeah, and I would take it even one step further. Not good. You're better than the individuals that are in the government making these decisions. They have no clue what your lifestyle is across the country. They should not be making decisions about how you run your life.
Exactly.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Martine, thank you again, and we'll talk to you next week.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game, marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? YumaAdvertising.com. That's YumaAdvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program.
All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBOU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU El Dorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.